From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Wang Theater in Boston, Massachusetts, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Come on. This is Boston. I thought you'd make people earn it. Come on. It's great. It's great to be here. It's great to be in Boston. It's April. It's time for that annual rite of spring here when the Red Sox fans flock to historic Fenway Park, take their seats, and assume the crash position. Little tip for you, if you use a straw, you can still drink your beer with your head between your knees. Who better to explain the ongoing calamity that is baseball in Boston than Jim Boughton, former Major League pitcher and author of the great baseball memoir, Ball 4. He'll be joining us later to play our game. First, it's your turn. Give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT is the number. That translates to 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant this week. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Julie Reinstrom calling from Washington, D.C.
How are things in Washington?
Pretty nice.
Pretty nice. It's a beautiful spring there, too, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
It's been everywhere. And your baseball team is doing well.
Oh, I wouldn't know. I'm actually a Cubs fan.
Oh. Well, welcome to the show, Julie. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedian and the host of the Who's Paying Attention podcast, Mr. Alonzo Bowden.
He's here.
Hello, Julie.
Next, a comedian performing at Union Hall in Brooklyn in New York on April 21st. It's Jesse Klein is here.
Hi, Julie.
And lastly, a genuine correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca is here.
Hi, Julie.
All right, you ready to plan?
Yeah.
Let's do this. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right, here is your first quote. Now, this is from somebody who conceded this week that he was, in fact, losing.
We were winning. We were winning in a very different way.
That was somebody who ended up losing in the traditional way, the GOP nomination. Who was it?
I think that was an excerpt from Rick Santorum's speech to suspend his campaign.
That's right. Rick Santorum, indeed. He dropped out this week. His improbable run for the presidency taught us a lot about modern politics, that there's still a large part of the Republican Party that votes primarily on social issues, and that the endorsement of the front man for Megadeth isn't the political coronation it used to be.
I think he's on to something with this, we're not losing, we're winning in a different way. I can hear fired coaches in every sport saying that on their way out the door. Like, no, I was just winning in a different way. I figured having lower points, we wouldn't be as tired.
So after this campaign, he's become a dropout. We assume he'll hang out in the streets with the other dropouts, like Herman Cain and Michelle Bachmann, and smoke cigarettes and cadge for change. This can't work. Everybody knows that dropping out leads to gang banging, and Santorum is opposed to both gangs and banging. I miss him already. I miss them all. I really do. I want them all back. I want Herman Cain back. I want Rick Perry back.
As a comic, I'll trade them all in for another month of Herman Cain. Just toss us that one.
999.
Oh, yeah.
So simple.
It's time for a reunion special where they all get back together.
They should be Real Housewives,
yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah,
together.
And we'll see them on Bravo all together.
Yeah.
Or they should get a beach house this summer. Just get them back together.
Yeah. Julie, here is your next quote.
It's meteorological March madness.
That was what the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is calling this March. It was very unusual. Why?
It was the hottest March?
It was one of the hottest months ever in terms of being over its average temperature.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
You know how much fun you had in March going for walks in your T-shirt and shorts, admiring the flowers and trees, tossing your dog to your Frisbee. Well, I hope you all enjoyed the end of the world Believe it or not, that was an extreme weather event, one of the warmest Marches ever. More than 20,000 local temperature records were broken in 1 month.
That's winning in a different way.
It is.
Al Gore is winning now. Yeah.
But all that fun you were having, it was a disaster. It was the picnipocalypse. Now we know the world won't end with a bang, but with an al fresco brunch on the terrace.
I think this is the return of La Nina. I think if we sealed our borders, we wouldn't have this problem.
Really? You wouldn't let those foreign weather patterns?
El Nino and La Nina would have never come here if we built that wall.
Exactly.
And we wouldn't have any irregular temperatures.
But this disaster, this sort of pleasant disaster, was why the Weather Channel had all those reports from grim-faced field reporters standing in lovely meadows in shorts and Hawaiian shirts. It's terrible out here, Phil. You can see the grass gently blowing in the breeze behind me. Thousands of residents here desperately in need of wine coolers and aperitifs. But this means, like, if this goes on, the entire country will become Southern California.
Oh,
which cannot work. Crusty Maine lobstermen will be getting boob jobs and abandoning their traps to go to auditions. Julie, here is your last quote.
I love him. I respect him. You know why? A lot of people have wanted to kill him for the last 60 years, but that bleep is still there.
That was Ozzie Guillen, the new manager of the Miami Marlins. That would be a baseball team in Miami. Praising whom?
Oh, I don't know anything about sports.
Let's play a little game with you calling Are You Smarter Than Ozzie Guillen? Let's say you're in Miami, and you want to do something that will offend the maximal number of people in Miami, particularly Spanish-speaking people in Miami. What world leader would you then praise if you wanted to do that?
Fidel Castro?
Yes, indeed. There you go. Congratulations. You're a winner on You're Smarter Than Ozzie Guillen. And this wasn't an ambush. Time magazine didn't say, hey, what's your opinion of Fidel Castro, the Hitler of South Florida? No, Ozzie Guillen volunteered his love for Fidel Castro. He said, hey, reporter, is your tape deck running? Great. Here we go. Ready? I love Castro. Did you get that? Also, Stalin was underrated. Pol Pot is my BFF. And my favorite deadly virus is a toss-up between HIV and Ebola. Anything else you want?
What did he say? What was the quote?
He said, I love him. I love Fidel Castro. I respect him. You know why? A lot of people have wanted to kill Castro for the last 60 years, but that obscenity is still there.
What question was he asked?
He wasn't asked any question
at all. It just came out.
It's like, oh, Mr. Guillen, how's the team going? You know, before we get to that, something on my mind.
Mr. Guillen, how do you feel about your pitching this season? Well, I love Fidel Castro.
Pretty much.
Ozzie's defense was that he was thinking in Spanish and speaking English.
Is that right? Is that what he said?
And I have tried that line on more Latin girls. It just doesn't work.
No. Carl, how did Julie do in our quiz?
Julie, you're a winner. You had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the
well
message
done
on your voicemail or answering machine.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks back home at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Alonzo, safety advocates are trying to make people more and more aware of the dangers of texting while walking. Well, we got a real cautionary tale this week when a California man was texting and failed to notice what as he almost walked into it.
A building?
No. That happens every day.
Yeah. A hole in the ground?
No.
No. Let's see. He was texting and walking.
He finally looked up when it growled.
Oh, a bear?
A bear. A 400-pound bear right in front of him. The man was walking out of his house in a residential area in California. He was texting his boss to tell him he was running late. He looked up and, OMG, giant bear. Excuse me. WTF.
Totes almost walked into bear.
Yeah. He turned and ran for his life after, of course, stopping to Instagram it, you know. It took 3 tranquilizer darts for game officials to bring the bear down. With an additional 2 darts, they were able to make the man stop texting. Running from game officials.
I think at that point, it's not your fault. I think if you're walking in a neighborhood,
yeah,
it is reasonable to not expect there to be a bear.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, I can see you walk into a fence or trip over a tricycle, but when there's a bear in the neighborhood, you're like, okay, wait a minute. This is not my fault.
Well, the reason the bear was there is that the bear was also texting. And the bear just wandered out, didn't realize where it was.
And the bear was like,
oh my God, I'm in L.A.
Yeah.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Jesse Klein, and Alonzo Bowden. And here again is your host at the Wang Theater in Boston, Massachusetts, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Walter Rich from Los Angeles.
Hey, Walter, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. What do you do there?
I'm a school teacher, high school school teacher.
That is tough work, and I thank you for doing it. Couldn't do it in a bet.
Thank you. Thank you.
And knowing as you do, the 10th graders of today, do we have a future?
If they stop texting.
There you are. Walter, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Walter's topic?
Peter bit my finger.
Before Farmville, there were real farms. Before Facebook, people had faces and books. It's easy to assume many of our internet trends started with the internet, but it turns out at least one of the most popular internet memes had a history long before the internet. And our panelists are going to tell you about it. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Let's hear first from Alonzo Bowden.
If you think the notion to put cute slogans on top of photographs of kittens originated with the internet, think again. Even in the 1870s, humans were obsessed with ridiculous photos of cats. Long before dogs began playing poker on velvet paintings, the dignity of the domesticated feline was doomed. Probably the first person to blame for silly cat pictures was English photographer Harry Poynter, who snapped approximately 200 photos of his perplexed, albeit jovial, Brighton cats. Poynter often arranged his cats in poses that mimicked human activities. A cat riding a tricycle or cats roller skating was what people loved. Harry Poynter soon realized that even a relatively straightforward cat photograph could be turned into an amusing or appealing image by adding a written caption. So, the next time you see a viral pic of a kitten hanging on for dear life with the caption, "Hang in there, baby, Friday's coming," keep in mind that he's been hanging in there a long time.
Well done, LOL cats of the Victorian era. Your next story of a pre-internet life comes from Jesse Klein.
We've all heard of Star Wars Kid. The unfortunate boy whose embarrassing video of himself swinging around a golf ball retriever as if it were a lightsaber was uploaded by another student and became one of the first worldwide internet memes. But it turns out this kind of public humiliation is nothing new. A medieval historian has just published an article in the British Historical Review called King Arthur Kid, about a 12th century English boy named Edric, who was the first child to be shamed on such an enormous scale. It all began when Edric, a bookish 10-year-old, was wandering around his father's estate and found a stick in almost the exact same size and shape as a sword. Edric was obsessed with the King Arthur story and began swinging the stick around, pretending he was the famous knight and the stick was Excalibur. It looked so stupid. Unbeknownst to Edric, the blacksmith's teenage son, Willem, was watching the whole thing from behind a nearby rock, and because Willem was a total jerk, he started telling everyone about what he'd seen. From the town cobbler to the town wench, the story was passed along. Soon the town crier began shouting the news, and town criers in other villages picked up the tale. Before long, the story of Edric and the stick had been yelled almost 200 million times. Poor Edric was so badly harassed, he would have dropped out of school if kids at the time had gone to school.
A Star Wars kid of the Middle Ages. Your last story of the web before the web comes from Mo Rocca.
Long before we learned to rely for answers on an online encyclopedia, residents of 17th century Salem, Massachusetts had their own alternative to a good old-fashioned reference library. They asked witches, specifically a group of supposedly learned heretics known as the Wikipedia Coven. Said Harvard folklore and mythology professor Abby Cohn, quote, lazy Puritans would seek answers from a Wikipedian. She would incantate over a cauldron praying for the answer, and then just say whatever crap came to mind. But beware the witch with two different answers for one question. She would curse you with disambiguation and perpetual confusion.
All right. One of these things, which we thought was an internet thing, existed before the internet. Was it from Alonzo Bowden, cute pictures of cats in the Victorian era? From Jesse Klein, the mass humiliation of some kid swinging a stick around, just like the Star Wars kid, but this time in the Middle Ages? Or from Mo Rocca, Wikipedia, a coven of knowledgeable witches in Salem who you could ask anything?
Wow.
Yes.
That's the right answer.
Exactly.
I feel like one of my students on a test. So I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B?
Yeah.
Jesse's story of the medieval Star Wars kid?
That's the one.
But now
really?
They don't like it here, but this is Boston. They're naturally judgmental.
They boo you even when they like you.
Exactly. That's how they express their enthusiasm.
Well, I love Boston, so I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A. You're going to change it. They like A. They like A a lot. All right. Your choice is A. That would be Alonzo's story of the kitten pictures from the Victorian era. Well, we actually spoke to someone who wrote about this week.
People these days are obsessed with cats on the internet and slapping kind of spooky little slogans on them. But this tradition stems way back to about a century ago.
That was Sirach Lamar, an editor at io9.com. He was writing about this phenomenon of Victorian lolcats. Congratulations, you did it. You picked the right story, thanks to the audience. You've earned a point for Alonzo.
Thank you.
And you've won our game, Carl. Recorded reading on your home voicemail. Yay.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well done. Thanks so much for playing. And now the game where we invite on big names and ask them tiny questions. Our guest, Jim Boughton, is a former All-Star pitcher for the New York Yankees, and yet somehow they let him into Boston. His classic baseball memoir, Ball 4, is now out as an ebook and as an audiobook read by him. Jim Boughton, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So, as a baseball fan, I heard all my life that Ball 4 was this amazingly scandalous book that blew the lid off the sport, revealed all these secrets, but I didn't get around to reading it until 5 or 6 years ago. And I was amazed to find out that professional baseball players drank, fooled around with girls, and sometimes took drugs to help their performance.
Oh, jeez.
Maybe I'm just jaded living what I do now. Can you explain the impact the book had in 1970 when it came out?
Well, there was a great deal of objection from two quarters. One was the sports writers, because they didn't have the access I had, and they had been sort of pushing, a milk and cookies, Boy Scout kind of view of players.
Right.
Also, the owners were against the book because Ball 4 was the first book to tell people how difficult it was to make a living in baseball.
Yeah, it was hard.
Minimum salary was $7,000. My average salary for 8 years in the major leagues was $19,000.
But did the other players get mad at you for telling tales out of the locker room, I guess?
Well, some of the guys did, but you got to understand, in those days, most guys who played professional baseball had a little more than a high school education. These were not readers.
Right.
You know, unlike today. if you were on a bus, a team bus, going to some, airport or something like that, and you were reading a book, they called you the professor. These guys were innocents, and they were very vulnerable, and that's why they were they were able to take advantage of these guys.
Sure. So we're here in Boston this week. What is it like, since you've done it, to play at Fenway Park?
It's like pitching at the Roman Colosseum. At any moment, Fenway Park is a great place to play ball. I'm telling you, it's the only stadium where you can be on the mound and hear personal insults from the stands.
Really, that right? Close.
It's interactive.
It's great, and it starts way before the game, when the team bus pulls up to Fenway Park at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game. There are 250 people hollering at you in a foreign language.
Right.
And that starts it off.
Really? So you're welcome and made to feel warm as soon as you show up.
Oh, yeah.
You realize that now that you've said that you can hear them, it's going to be worse.
Yeah. Now they
Everyone's
know.
Everyone's like, oh, they can hear.
I loved pitching in Fenway Park. I thought it was a great experience.
You enjoyed it? Did you enjoy infuriating the crowd?
Well, my best one was, I don't know if you remember, when Dick Raddatz, the monster, 6'8" guy, big guy, great relief pitcher. And he would come into the ninth inning and he would strike out the side, Mantle, Maris, and Tresh. And he would walk off the mound with his arms raised over his head. And he was the monster. And the crowd would roar. Well, on a Sunday, I pitched a shutout. And I decided that it would be a good idea to walk off the mound with my arms over my head.
Right.
I walked off like I was the monster, and all this food and beverage started coming. Hot dogs, beer cans. I was dodging food on my way to the dugout. And
as you get to the dugout, you get closer to the people throwing the food.
Yeah, right, right.
You have less time to react.
But there was shelter there, too,
Yeah, I know.
Underneath something. Frankie Crosetti said, "Are you crazy? Don't you know these people?
Don't you know where you are? They'll kill you." That's terrible.
Yeah.
One of the things in your book is you suggest that the coaches and managers have no idea what they're talking about. They have no effect. Is that true?
At that time, it was.
Right.
Today, I don't know what impact the manager has or what impact the coaches have, because I'm really not close enough to the game. But back then, the manager was usually some former player who everybody liked, and then he chose a coaching staff made up of basically his drinking buddies. So that was very unscientific.
Well, you have guys coming in and telling you to do one thing one day, and the next day they'd come in and they'd say, "Do something else," and you'd be like, "I have no what."
Yeah, well, they would say, "Hey, what are you doing with that baseball? I was going to take it out inside and throw it." "No, put it back in the bag. The baseballs don't come out until later." That kind of stuff.
Well, that's an important bit of guidance for you.
Yes,
to tell you
was.
Not to take the baseball out until later. That's the kind of guidance you got? Like, put the damn baseball down.
Right.
He's going to help you with your pitching. Put the baseball down.
"What are you doing with those baseballs? I'm bringing them outside." "Just take one." "Okay." I wish I could say I was kidding.
If you were talking to a non-baseball fan, and believe it or not, there are some, how would you pitch the game? What excites you about the game?
What doesn't excite me about the game is the stepping out of the batter's box. What are you stepping out of the batter's box for?
You mean when the people step out of the batter and delay the game?
After every pitch, guy steps out of the batter's box, he's got to fix the straps on his glove.
He's got to spit in his hand, depending.
All that. If they eliminated Velcro, it would knock 20 minutes off of every game. And I don't like guys hitting home runs and then raising their arms up like they just discovered a cure for cancer. "Hey, look at me. I just hit a home run." In our day, you hit a home run, you put your head down, you ran around the bases, you went into the dugout, and you shut up. You know why?
You won.
Because it's just a home run.
Right.
It's not a religious experience.
You weren't much of a hitter, though. Did you ever hit one?
I never hit a home run.
Well, then how do you know?
All right, so maybe I would have raised
my hand. I'm saying. All right, Jim Boughton, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
A Fistful of Greenies? That's nothing.
So you famously wrote about shenanigans in baseball, which have arguably gotten worse since then. But compared to other sports around the world, baseball players are hardly immoral at all. We're going to ask you three questions about people who really know how to cheat. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Jim Boughton playing for?
Jim is playing for Margaret Brown of Hamilton, Massachusetts.
Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first question. First question. One of these was the biggest scandal of the Sydney Olympic Games of 2000. Was it A, the Spanish Paralympics basketball team, none of whose members were actually disabled? B, the Estonian sailing team, which used an outboard motor? Or C, a Finnish fencer who hit a taser in his glove?
Ooh, I like the Finnish fencer idea. Yep. I like.
You're going to go with that?
I'm going with that.
You're going to go with that? Sadly, it was the Spanish Paralympics basketball team. The scam was revealed by a journalist who actually got onto the team. And after the Olympics and they won their gold medal, he revealed that nobody in the team was actually disabled. They were all faking. And once the report was published, they had to give up their gold medal.
Oh. See, I never read the sports section.
I understand. There's nothing there of any interest for any person. All right, you still have two more chances here. Jockey Sly Cormoosh, that's his real name, Sly Cormoosh, once used a heavy fog bank to win a horse race. How? A, he just stopped his horse, waited for the rest of the horses to come around the track, and then raced ahead of them to cross the finish line first. B, he got off his slow horse, rode around on a faster one, then jumped back on the slow one to win. Or C, he moved a fence that all the other horses got lost.
Whoa. I like the horse stopping.
He stopped and waited for him to come around. That's what he did.
Yeah, okay.
Huge fog bank. Nobody could see him. So as soon as he got out of the gate, he just reined up, waited for them to come around, and then he just rode in ahead of them to win. Although he got greedy, he won by too much, so people started asking questions. Last question. This is good. If you get this one right, you'll win.
Like two out of three?
You get two out of three, you win.
All right.
Perhaps the most famous sporting scandal ever was the strange attack on Nancy Kerrigan right before the 1994 Winter Olympics.
Oh, yes, yes.
Remember this? Arranged by her rival, Tonya Harding.
Right.
Ms. Harding was banned from figure skating after that was all done, but her athletic career did not end. She went on to do what? A, have a stint as the third seat in a professional bobsledding team. B, fight Bill Clinton accuser Paula Jones in a celebrity boxing match. Or C, she founded a very short-lived new sport called crowbar fencing.
I know the answer to this.
I think it was the bobsledding thing.
You think it was the bobsledding?
No, no, no. I wasn't the crowbar one, so it had to be the other one.
Well, you have to decide.
Oh my
now
God,
I remember it was the boxing.
It was. You were right. They were right. I was right. She had a celebrity boxing match with Paula Jones, and as the boxing writers like to say, she stopped Ms. Jones in three. So there you are. Carl, how did Jim Boughton do in our show?
Jim did well enough. Two correct answers, Jim, so you win for Margaret Brown.
Congratulations. There you are. If you want to throw your hands up in victory, we really won't mind here.
This is a public radio home run.
Yes, exactly. Jim Boughton's classic baseball memoir, Ball 4, is now available as an ebook and an audiobook. Jim Boughton, thank you so much for being on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell.
Thank you.
Jim Boughton, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hell yes, I cheated, even though it was wrong. He gave me something.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Alonzo Bowden, Jesse Klein, and Mo Rocca. And here again is your host at the Wang Theater in Boston, Massachusetts, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you all. In just a minute, Carl reenacts the midnight rhyme of Paul Revere in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Jesse, this week the Wall Street Journal published a list of the best and worst jobs in America. In the bottom 10 out of 200 different jobs were dairy farmer, meter reader, dishwasher, and what?
Wait, which? How did it rank?
It ranked in the bottom 10.
It was in the bottom 10.
Yeah, 200 jobs.
Of the worst jobs.
Yes.
Being a janitor in a toll booth, cleaning the toll booth up. No?
No.
Not that one?
A janitor in a toll booth, I think, would not be a terrible job, because however unpleasant it may be, it would be over quickly.
Right.
You'd be like, mop, 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 I'm done.
You would need to work overtime to make any money at that.
That's true.
I need a hint.
Well, it kind of hits close to home for all of us.
Talk on the radio.
Right. We broadcast on the radio, and the answer is broadcasters.
What?
Broadcasters
really?
In the top 10, yeah.
No.
The jobs are ranked by the Wall Street Journal in terms of income, stress, and hiring outlook, and the likelihood that when asked what you do, your parents say, son, I have no son. Some of the jobs that rank above broadcaster on this list, this is all true, roofer, sewage plant operator, and nuclear decontamination technician.
Broadcaster and sewage plant person are on the same list?
Yeah, except sewage plant operator is above us.
Where does
steadier work, if you think about it. Good news for broadcasters, though. Broadcasters do rank higher than broadcaster decontamination technician.
Well. Sewage plant operator.
Yes.
Well, I read a lot of crap before I come on this show.
Yeah. Mo, yes. IKEA is famous for making adorable cheap furniture and Swedish meatballs. Now they've announced plans to make a whole what?
Well, they also make lingonberries. They don't make them. They provide them. They're going to make... cars wouldn't be interesting. I don't think it's really adorable, the furniture, they make.
It's sort of an extreme extension of what they do already.
An extension of what they make already.
Maybe it'll be called Lingonberry Bird.
Oh, they're going to make an IKEA town.
Yes, they are.
A whole entire town.
They're going to build it. This new 27-acre community outside London will come with 40,000 pages of wordless assembly instructions.
I know.
And an Allen wrench the size of a telephone pole. It is yet to be named, but you can bet that the name will have an umlaut somewhere. The biggest danger, of course, is they finish building the whole town, the streets, the homes, and they have all these parts left over. Damn it, what was I supposed to do with this stoplight?
Is the whole town going to smell like meatballs?
It will.
That you don't really want?
Real estate analysts predict that in 2 years you'll be able to buy the whole town on Craigslist when everybody moves up to Crate and Barrelsville.
Where do you find contractors and construction workers to build an IKEA town? It just seems...
Oh, you do it yourself.
Oh,
the entire town packs flat. You can put it on top of your station wagon. Open it up. Alonzo, final preparations for the London Olympics are underway, of course. They're all going all out. Organizers tried to get legendary drummer Keith Moon of The Who to perform, but they were informed Mr. Moon was unavailable. Why?
Is he still alive?
That's one more question than they asked.
Is he dead?
He's very dead.
That's what I thought. Yeah, he's dead.
He's as dead can be. He died in 1978.
He should have told somebody.
He should have.
You got
went quietly.
You got to get a publicist or something.
So it was pretty stupid for the London Olympics to try to get Keith Moon to play at their ceremonies. On the other hand, if they had gotten him, it would have been a coup. Organizers sent the request to Bill Kerbishley. He is the Who's manager and winner of this year's Most British Name Contest. Mr. Kerbishley responded, quote, Keith now resides in Golders Green Crematorium. If they have a round table, some glasses and candles, we might contact him. Embarrassed by the incident, London Olympic organizers are now withdrawing their silly requests for Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, and Keith Richards.
Thank you. Well, this guy couldn't have been much of a manager because my people would have asked for an advance.
That's true. How much are you offering? Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. Or check out the podcast, How to Do Everything. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to name the new drug that you just invented. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Dawn Quiet, and I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Your name is Dawn Quiet?
It is.
It is. I'm not going to do what everybody else has for your entire life.
Oh, that would be lovely.
All right. I'll be silent about it.
Okay, great.
What do you do there in Dallas?
I'm the PR director for a new arts and parade in Dallas, Texas called Dallas Solstice.
So what will the Dallas Solstice be?
It'll be a parade where actually everybody gets to be in the parade. Everybody gets to make a float, and everybody gets
so
to participate.
Everybody in Dallas is going to be in the parade?
Everybody who wants to be can be in the parade.
Well, who's going to watch it, though, if everybody's in the parade?
Yeah, good question.
People from Fort Worth.
There you go. What good are they? Well, welcome to the show, Dawn. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to play?
I am.
Here's your first limerick.
Hey, let's get the whole drunken gang over, cause the nausea and headaches sharp pangs over. The New Vegas bus is replenishing us. The ride is a cure for my
hangover.
Yes, very good. You know that old saying, what happens in Vegas usually gets vomited at 6 in the morning into the Bellagio fountain? Well, a local doctor is trying to help with the Hangover Haven. It's a fleet of buses tricked out as moving hangover triage wards. For $150, you go onto the bus, nurses replenish your bodily fluids with IVs, supposedly curing your hangover. If you're too wasted to leave your hotel room, for $500, they'll come up to you. This is an incredibly bold move on the part of this doctor, because who has ever gotten onto a bus and gotten off feeling less sick than when they got on?
I'm just thinking a service in Vegas provided for $150 on the street and $500 in your room.
Right. An established business model in that town.
That's probably going to work.
I think so. All right, here's your next limerick.
White Castle's becoming refined. It's where the sophisticates dine. Our feature today, a robust Cabernet. We're pairing our sliders with
wine.
Yes. Used to be, when you wanted a wine to pair with a sack of White Castle sliders at 3 in the morning, you had to bring a bottle from your own cellar. But now, one Indiana White Castle is providing a wine list along with their chicken rings and burgers. Now, the problem here is that White Castle is supposed to be the place you go to after you get drunk. Where do you go when you get drunk at White Castle? What is lower on the food totem pole?
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. And then if Taco Bell starts serving wine and beer, then you'd be like, hey there, you troop of ants, are you going to finish that watermelon rind?
That'll be an interesting answer when you get on the hangover bus. And they're like, what did you drink? It's like, oh, so much wine with my White Castle.
All right, here is your last limerick.
Kids are sweet while on all fours they scoot. Once they walk, they're more of a brute. When they turn 4, they're hard to adore. Almost 5, and they're no longer...
Can't ignore them? Ignore? I don't know.
When they're 5, you can no longer ignore them?
How many kids do you have?
Yeah, Dawn, are you a parent? Where are they now?
Dawn's been very busy with the parade.
Yes, I'm getting ready for that. No kids.
All right, let's try again. Listen for the rhyme, I think.
Okay.
Kids are sweet while on all fours they scoot. Once they walk, they're more of a brute. When they turn 4, they're hard to adore. Almost 5, and they're no longer...
I have no idea. I'm blank.
They're no longer cute.
Oh, that's true.
You agree? Okay. If your five-year-old is looking a lot less adorable, that's because, according to the scientists at the University of Toronto, she has passed her cute prime. That ends at approximately age 4.5. They say that during the first few years of life, babies and toddlers have, quote, irresistibly cute faces, chubby little cheeks and button noses and puffy lips. But then they start to age, and their features begin to mold and calcify into mini versions of their parents.
That's depressing. I thought the age was 30.
Really? No.
Now it's 5.
And who are these doctors that literally studied, like, when are these children no longer cute? I'm tired of these cute 7-year-olds.
Yeah, they're like,
around.
What are we going to figure out? The theory of relativity has been done.
I think there's 6-year-olds playing doctor.
Exactly.
Who came up with this.
Carol, how did Don do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. Don, you had 2 correct answers, so you win our prize, and I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well done. Right, congratulations. Thank you so much for playing, Don. Good luck with the parade.
Thank you. Overload, overload, it's a cute overload. Don't you want to take us home? Cute, 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 overload, overload, overload. It's a cute overload. Don't you want to take us home? Cute, 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 overload.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Alonzo Bowden has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. Jesse Klein and Mo Rocca are tied for second. They both have 2 points each.
Oh my gosh, all right. All right, we flipped a coin. Mo is elected to go first. Here we go. The clock will start when they begin your first question. On Wednesday, George Zimmerman, the Neighborhood Watch volunteer accused of shooting blank, was charged with second-degree murder.
Trayvon Martin?
Yes. Facebook announced Monday it was spending $1 billion to buy the photo-sharing app blank.
Instagram.
Right. On Wednesday, Indonesia, Mexico, and the coasts of California, Oregon, and Maine were hit with blank.
It was the earthquake.
Earthquakes, yes. Yeah. Newt Gingrich blasted Fox News on Wednesday, saying the channel has favored blank for the entire campaign.
Has favored Mitt Romney.
Yes, indeed. A team of American journalists was able to get close to Hezbollah by blanking them.
By dating them.
No, by challenging them to a game of paintball. Okay. Last Sunday, 15,000 people attended an Easter ceremony in Texas starring football star blank.
Tim Tebow.
Yes, in part because of conflicts with the band, Guns N' Roses frontman Axl Rose declined his induction into the blank.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
What else? Yes, a child in England was surprised to find a blank during an Easter egg hunt.
He found a bunny. He found a chicken with a bunny.
No. What he found during the Easter egg hunt was a hand grenade.
A Hezbollah Easter egg
hunt? No. Apparently it was an old World War II munition. The children were so excited they were squealing, "Oh, look what the Easter commando brought us." Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Mo has taken the lead.
Very well done. All right, Jesse, you're up next. Fill in the blank.
I'm ready.
Best known for his tough interviewing style, legendary newsman blank died last Sunday at age 93.
Mike Wallace.
Right. Officials of the U.S. and South Korea say that a missile fired by blank on Friday crashed into the sea.
North Korea.
Right. Tea Party Republican Alan West of Florida said he knows at least 80 Democrats in Congress are members of blank.
Communist Party.
Yes. He had a list in his hand. Democrats and Republicans both criticized comments by a Democratic consultant who said Wednesday that blank has never worked a day in her life.
Ann Romney.
Right. After mishearing a 911 call, 2 ambulance crews and a police car in England rushed to the scene of blank.
A texting bear.
No, a model train accident. In a sudden death playoff last weekend, golfer Bubba Watson won the blank tournament.
The Masters.
Yes. Just 24 hours after an internal mole began posting videos on the internet, blank identified, fired him, and sued him.
Gawker? Fox? What?
Fox. Yes, Fox News. Officials at Britain's National Health Service say they found an error in a recent report, so now they believe that 20,000 British men are not, in fact, blank.
Pale.
No, they now say that these 20,000 British men were not, in fact, pregnant.
Oh, that's even dumber than what I said.
The men had been shocked to find out they were pregnant because all 20,000 of them had been saving themselves for marriage. Turned out to be due to a data entry error. Doctors are holding one man for observation, though, after he reported his beer gut was kicking. Carl, how did Jesse do?
Jesse had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and she's tied with Mo Rocca for the lead.
Well done.
I hate ties.
Well, let's see if Alonzo can break it. How many does Alonzo need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Here we go. This is for the game, Alonzo. After the April 12th UN deadline passed, a fragile ceasefire took hold in blank.
Syria?
Yes. The Department of Justice filed an antitrust lawsuit this week against Apple and 5 publishers, accusing them of conspiring on the price of blank.
E-books.
Right. After their profits rose 61%, search engine company blank announced a stock split.
Google?
Yes. Citizens of a small town in Spain are calling for the mayor to resign after he banned blanking.
Sex?
No, burping in public and other forms of rudeness. Melissa Gilbert suffered a concussion and whiplash while performing the Paso Doble on this week's blank.
Dancing with the Stars.
Right. Little Brown and Company announced Thursday that The Casual Vacancy will be the name of the first novel for adults by author blank.
Rowland?
Yes, J.K. Rowling. An Indianapolis man was arrested by police for walking down the street naked, even though he told them it's okay because blank.
It was reverse day?
Yes, he said, it's opposite day, he said, while walking down the street naked. So that means, he said, I can walk around naked. And the arresting officer then said to him, he said, fine, in that case, you are not going to jail for public indecency, and arrested him. Carl, did Alonzo knew well enough to win?
He had 6 correct answers, Peter, for 12 more points, which means he has 16 points, and that makes him this week's champion.
Well done, Alonzo. Oh, it's great. Alonzo's got his arms up, the crowd throwing beer, throwing food at him. It's just like Boston.
I think he was juicing.
He was. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists how Ozzie Guillen will next offend all the residents of Miami. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, offering online tools, a 24/7 service, insurance for the modern world, more at eSurance.com, CSX transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward, CSX How Tomorrow Moves, and GoDaddy, offering domain names, website builders, and 24/7 in-house customer support. Details at GoDaddy.com. Wait, don't tell me. A production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Kate Casey. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Littiman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walshover and Emily Ecton. Technical directors from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Special thanks this week to the crew at the Wang Theater in downtown Boston, Massachusetts. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, how will Ozzie Guillen upset Miamians next time? Alonzo Bowden.
Ozzie's going to lose his accent, and when they can understand what he's saying, there's really going to be trouble.
Jesse Klein.
He will be caught on tape saying he loves everything about Florida except the old people.
And Mo Rocca.
He will gravely offend Miamians and be drummed out of town when he decides not to get implants.
And if Ozzie Guillen does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Goldcastle. Thanks also to Alonzo Bowden, Jesse Klein, Mo Rocca. Thanks to our fabulous audience here in the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.